and my dad, his shop began to grow. By the time the war came, Camp MacArthur, you know, came to Waco, and that was filled with the 32nd Division with Wisconsin and Michigan soldiers. The soldiers began to come to town and have their work done in town. They'd come to my dad's shop. He had a nice big shop where you could sit around and read newspapers, and he'd have magazines there where they could they wait. And he always had that place full of soldiers. In fact, he had one of them come in there wanting to work for him one day. But he would work late on Saturday night. He'd work day and night, not only on Saturday nights, but on weeknights to catch up. Then pretty soon the government gave him a contract to take care of the officers' boots. They all had to have so much done to their boots all the time. Of course, the enlisted men would just come and have their own shoes fixed, you know. But he had a contract for those officers' boots. He made a lot of money during the war. Mm-hmm. And that was where he really, that was a bonanza for him. And that's where he got really established. Mm-hmm. And because I was in high school at that time, that was during the war. Mm-hmm. And it was a big day for a big time for Waco, because it Waco enlarged. I forgot the population went up so big, and so many of the soldiers that came to Waco at that time married Waco girls when the war was over, and some of them were still living here in Waco. I noticed two or three in the paper the other day, some reunion, and it was one of those Michigan soldiers that had married a Waco girl. So that was a big time for Baylor Waco. That army camp was located not too far from here, up on 19th Street. There's still remnants of it out there.
Well, you shared with us how World War I affected your family, mm-hmm. and with your Uncle Philip, and some about your father's business in Camp MacArthur. Mm-hmm. In school there, in Waco High School, were there other effects you felt from World War I?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, we had to give up a lot, we had, if things were scarce, you couldn't have a lot of things you wanted, you know, and it cut down on a lot of social things that were going on. And then, of course, when the flu epidemic hit at that same time, that I told you about this funeral procession going up to the Katy Station, and we saw that all the time. And there were so many other things that happened in high school that I'm going to tell about. They want me to do something for Waco High School's group too, so it's going to be the same thing I'm telling you.
Okay.
And of course there wasn't as much activity in Waco High School as we would have wanted it, but that was wartime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And soldiers were everywhere. They were all over town. You couldn't turn around without running into soldiers. And we had military parades. Every time we had a parade, the units would come from the camp, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, at home, it was my grandmother just worrying all the time if we didn't hear from him. And we would write to our uncle in France. And I wrote him a letter one day. And he came home from the war, and he pulled it out of his pocket. And he was a picture of health when he came home. He says, "I want to show you something." He showed me this letter. And it was a stationery, you know, where you fold it over double. Mm-hmm. All through the double thing was a round hole. He said, "You know how that got there?" He said, "The German shot it." He said he had that letter in his pocket when he was in the trenches, and a bullet grazed, hit, tore the pocket loose from his jacket, and went straight through it with a hole, and that hole went through, the bullet went through my letter.
My goodness.
And that was the letter I had written. But we kept a correspondence. We just loved him. He was the greatest guy.
Well, how did it affect your... say the Lasavios and their Italian import business?
Well, his import business began to go down. In fact, we couldn't get much then.
Yeah.
See, he had to go into groceries mostly then, because of course it came back after the war. But right during the war, it was hard to get anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. How about any correspondence with your relatives back?
Well,
then?
See, they couldn't. Those that had relatives, they had a hard time getting mail. Because they would open the soldiers' mails, you know, they censored the mails.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the Mistratus had a family back in Sicily. Now they had, and the Nicosia. See, I haven't mentioned a lot of Italian names. There's still more to come.
Uh-huh.
But their families were still, oh, they have, now my father didn't have, all the commandos just got out of there. And there weren't any more commandos left. Except they said one cousin was left, and he was in charge of a school there. But my dad didn't know where he was or anything. But all the commandos were in safe places. And one of my uncles was stationed in northern Italy during the war. Mm-hmm. He loved it over there because he got to see a lot, you know, he'd never been back to Italy. Mm-hmm. But my Uncle Philip was stationed in France mm-hmm. all the time.
Your friend that was a German, Lena, how did her German family...
Well, that was sad. Yeah. Not with Lena, because we never stopped liking each other. There was a German newspaper printed in Waco, the Schacks. Ed Schack, S-C-H-A-C-K. And they lived on 8th Street by the German church. You know, there was a German church on 8th Street. Mm-hmm. And they put out a little German newspaper once a week, and Alina would help them sometime, help them print, fix the print. And the minute war was declared, they shut down that paper. The day we went back to school after war was declared, we had a German teacher named Beasley, had his name over the door, went upstairs, that name was down, the door was dark, and they had to put him out of school. Now, that was so ridiculous, it wasn't even, that was just, the kids were just mad, because he was a nice teacher. Mm-hmm. Then they accused the principal of being a spy, that he and a math teacher named Werkentin, he was a German, radios were just coming in, mm-hmm. and they were fixed a radio up on top of the high school building, and they said they were sending messages to the enemy. Well, our principal, Genheimer, was a German. And he came up the next day at school, and the man was so mad, we thought he was going to have a stroke or something. Up on the platform there, and it was a rumor. It's all it was, a rumor. And they finally retracted it in the newspaper and settled it. But Werkentin, the math teacher, never came back. So we never did know the real story there. Mm-hmm.
The reaction was really swift to...
Oh, it just went through the whole town. Everybody was mad at the Germans. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't even play German music. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was so silly. They said one man had a player piano, and he had a lot of rolls with the Germans. They said he took every one of them out and burned them. I said, how stupid, I wish I had those rolls. Mm-hmm. But that was the attitude, you know, it was taken up. They were so mad inside because we had a war mm-hmm. that we're taking it out. But when my uncle was in the Army of Occupation, he said the German people were such great people.
Mm-hmm. Was there any trouble between the soldiers that were here, stationed here, and the German community? I mean, or was it mostly the local people?
Well, I don't think the soldiers, it bothered them too much because I think they had different attitude toward it. They were just wanting to win the war and get out. Uh-huh. But, you know, they brought a lot of prisoners of war. German POWs came to Waco. Mm-hmm. And we were invited to visit our glee club sang out at the thing. And we were invited to eat there. And the POWs were serving the tables.
Oh, at Camp MacArthur.
We got to see them. They had POW on the back of their jackets. And they had them out at Camp MacArthur serving food. And that was during the war. Now, you know, Camp MacArthur was named for old General MacArthur's father in San Antonio there. Okay. And it was a beautiful camp. Goodness, they had everything out there. And I know on Thanksgiving and Christmas, they would ask Waco people to invite soldiers to have things. Well, my dad would meet them in his shop, and he always would invite them to come for Sunday dinner or for on Thanksgiving, you know, and I remember we invited them on Thanksgiving, and they had been training that morning, and then they came on, had dinner at our house, and you know, those boys were so hungry. My mother just kept pushing the food at them, and they went back into the living room after we ate, and we didn't have TV or anything. They just sit there and look at pictures and books and, you know, things like that and talk. Two of them sat there and went to sleep. Do you know they slept for about 2 hours sitting on the couch with their head thrown back? That was the one I will remember, that sight of those two boys. But we had them in our house a lot, and I know one of them was an Italian boy from Michigan. And he liked my little brother, was little then. And he said, "You like to ride a horse?" And my brother said, I don't know how to ride a horse." He brought one of the horses from the camp, a cavalry horse, and came down and came to our house, and he took my little brother on that horse, riding him all around South Waco. And he went on back to camp on the horse. Mm-hmm. But that's how friendly they were. They were so, Michigan and Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.
Were there very many Italian Americans?
Yes, there were lots. We had a lot of Italian soldiers at our house, mm-hmm. and from Michigan, especially from Detroit. Mm-hmm. A lot of them from Detroit, and a lot of them married Waco girls. A lot of those soldiers, and you know where I'm living right now, mm-hmm. was Richfield Air Force out here. There was training school for flyers, mm-hmm. right on this very spot. It might have been right here. And one of the buildings out there on the park out here, okay. is the office. One of the offices they kept that is one of the buildings. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, that was it.
So there's Camp MacArthur and Richfield, mm-hmm. two different.
Yeah, there's two different things. Mm-hmm. And then they had these. And then in the next war, you know, we had Blackland, mm-hmm. and Conway. So Waco has had its share. And I remember my brother and my uncle came home with a story about the war. They were honoring the son of some wealthy family here, giving him a posthumous medals and I don't know what all. And my uncle sat there laughing. And he said, "You know, if they only knew what I know." And we didn't know what he meant. He said, "You know, we saw that man. He didn't lead the troops to victory. We saw him shot down by his own men because he was such a tough officer. His own men had it in for him. And when they went up over the trenches, you know, they shot him in the back."
Oh, my.
But then he was honored as a hero that led that detachment out of it. Mm-hmm. And my uncle, of course, he never told anybody but the family, but that was it. Mm-hmm. Such funny things come out of those situations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that was the war.
Did your uncles that fought, did they train here?
Or
they
no, he trained in Fort Sam Houston, 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. He was so good looking.
You mentioned other uncles that went. Who were they?
Well, see, they trained in a different place. Now, I think one of them trained in, one of them trained out here at Camp MacArthur, mm-hmm. and because he was older. And they put him somewhere in the United States, I've forgotten. I think maybe it was Tennessee or someplace.
What was his name?
I don't know. His name was Tony.
That's Tony. Okay.
And then the one named Gaetano was the one that went to Italy.
Okay.
And he trained overseas. Mm-hmm. They just had those boys going so fast, you know, it just didn't make any difference.
Were they drafted or volunteered?
Well, my uncle was volunteered. He didn't want to be drafted. Mm-hmm. He volunteered. And there were so many boys in Waco to try to get him to get a job out at Camp MacArthur, you know, mm-hmm. like working in a commissary or something, because yeah. then you don't have to go to war. But my uncle wouldn't do it. Mm. And I said, "Well, if he'd done that, he'd be alive today." But he wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. He was the one. He joined the infantry, I guess it was. Yeah, the infantry.
Now, was he married?
No. No, he was not married. He was just 31 years old when he went to war. That war was devastating. It really ripped up the families, and mm-hmm. and of course when Armistice Day came, everybody was shouting. But we were, everybody in the family was happy too. But we still felt something could happen to him before he gets back home. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did you get the news that the war was over?
4:00 in the morning. We were all in bed, and somebody stopped outside of our house in a car, and they were beating on. I don't know what they had, pots and pans and drum and tubs or whatever it was. And they were screaming and yelling my grandmother's name. And we knew that something had happened. And see, my grandmother lived right across the street. And she came, my dad went over and got her. And they all came, there's a bunch of Italians that came in a car and come to tell grandma that the war was over. And that's how we got the news. That was a great day, mm-hmm. November 11th. And, you know, I think about it when I see these these veterans marching in the November 11th parade, I still think they didn't treat some of them right, you know. And you feel so sorry to see these old men, so feeble, some of them couldn't even walk. And there were those young men that went out and just gave up everything.
Mm-hmm. Were there any veterans' rights for your brother that had the mustard gas?
Yes,
damage?
There were three or four more. The ones that got it lived in El Paso. I remember his two best friends. Mm-hmm. And we never did find out what happened to them, but I'm sure they didn't live through it either.
Did the government help pay them anything? Was there a pension or anything?
Yeah, they gave them their... you see, they were insured for $10,000. Mm-hmm. And that's another story you'll hear later on.
Okay.
and that was the money that they got. And they also helped... They were going to send him... The government was going to do it to send him to a hospital in Denver, a TB hospital. Mm-hmm. But then when Dr. Wilk said that, that's not TB, it's, and he said, there's no chance. And, it, you know, he lived several months after that. That was on the 4th of July that we learned what was wrong. And he didn't die till the next April. Now, you can imagine what life was like between that 4th of July and the following. And that was why we didn't have a big wedding.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This was in about 1922 mm-hmm.
He died in 22.
Tell me some more about our Mistress Day and how it was celebrated.
Oh, they turned out school. And the boys, the kids at school, got trucks. People had trucks just converged on the square. And they filled them up with high school students and Baylor students and townspeople. They went all over town, Wake, all around into East Waco and South Waco. And they were all over town making noises. And they were blowing the whistles. All of the manufacturing companies here used to have whistles that would blow at noon for lunch. And all of those things started blowing all over town. The churches were ringing their bells. And, oh, listen, it was pandemonium. And the two divisions out at the camp came out full force and marched all the way from Camp McArthur out to the Cotton Palace. And they had a big rally out there. And, oh, I think some of the restaurants opened up and were giving free food to all the soldiers that came in. It was just like a, you know, there was an old movie, a comedian's movie, way back there called Hell's a Poppin'. And that's what it was like, you know. It was just all, you couldn't even hear yourself talk.
What did you do that day?
Well, we were out of school. We had a big, all of the family came to our house and everybody was bringing food. And we went to all of the parades. We went downtown and watched all these trucks that were up. No, Waco really put on a celebration. And when we went back to school, well, that next morning, we went to school to see what was going to happen. And one of the boys had gotten a great big American flag, and he was in the upper study hall, and he was waving that flag. Mr. Genheimer was back in favor again. And he made a big speech, and all of the kids that sang songs, and then he rang the bell, and he says, go home. And they turned school out. And then that's when they all got in all these trucks. So it was quite a day.
Now, Mr. Genheimer stayed on as principal. Mr. Beasley had to leave. What was the difference?
Well, we never did know the straight of that, whether Mr. Beasley just left because he felt the heat. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I don't think he was fired. I just don't really believe that man was fired. Mm-hmm. But see, they closed the German department. You couldn't take German anymore. They put French in.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But it was so ridiculous, though, because my best friend was a German, and you know her father kind of affected him because he lived in Germany. But
what kind of business was he?
He had that bakery. That
oh
one.
Yes, that's right.
You know, there were some of the best bakeries on Austin Avenue.
Was he able to keep his business going?
Yeah, he kept his business going. Keaton's had a bakery. Cola had a bakery, there was a French bakery, and there was an American bakery. Four bakers on Austin Avenue. Mm-hmm. And they had the best food. And, of course, then came the 11th grade. Well, the war came in between there. That was kind of broke the spirit there. When the war came in, we had to start a cartel a lot of things in high school because students were volunteering to do social service work for the camp and for this and for that, for Red Cross, you know, they were doing. I know my daughters learned to knit like that in the Second World War. They taught kids how to knit, and they'd go, and they'd take a knitting thing going everywhere they went. They were knitting sweaters and socks and everything else. But those things kind of came in between it. But it did spoil our glee club because we did a lot of entertaining. And, of course, as I told you, I think I mentioned to you before how during the flu epidemic, how sad it was to see the military funerals going to the train station and everything. But soldiers were every part of Waco. They were invited into Waco homes and became a part of Waco. And, of course, the merchants just were taking in the dollars. Like on Saturday nights, Waco was a very busy town.
You said that your sister came to high school. Was she in eighth grade when you were in 10th grade?
When I was in the 10th, she was in the 8th. Okay. She was 2 years behind me.
Were there many boys that went off to join the Army from
high school? There were several. I remember one especially that I remember, one name that left he was a senior, and he left to join the service. That was Ralph Caulfield, who became a doctor in Waco. Mm-hmm. He's gone now. But I remember that one, and everybody was so excited when he left and so excited when he came back. And I remember when he came back, he had his uniform on, and he got on somebody's motorcycle and just went up and down Austin Avenue on that motorcycle. He'd just gotten out of the Army. That was Dr. Ralph Caulfield. But a lot of entertainments were given in Waco. They had sing songs out at the Cotton Palace. And the Army, the chorus out at the Army would join, and we'd go out to the Cotton Palace, and all Waco would go out, and they would sing all the war songs. And the songs that we sang, we began then to pick up these war songs, like Over There and A Long Way to Tipperary and all of those songs. My sister would go down to Crest, the Crest store. On every Saturday, they would put out a new sheet of music. And they had a girl playing the piano there. She would play it for you, see if you liked it. We would go down and buy that music, and my sister would put her name and address on that music. And I have a box of music now of the war music that my sister bought all during that war. And then we'd come home and sing them on Sunday afternoons. And one Sunday afternoon, we were singing till late Sunday night. A friend of ours came in and said, "You sure got an audience out front." Well, my dad went to see it. Lined up against our iron fence, we had an iron fence in front of our house, were soldiers leaning over the fence. And my dad went out to talk to them and ask them if they wouldn't come in. They wouldn't come in. They said, "We just wanted to listen to the music." Wow. And that was the kind of a thing. You know, they just wandered out into neighborhoods, and when they heard that music, there were 10 or 12 soldiers leaning up against the iron fence listening. But my dad asked them to come in and join it, but they wouldn't do it. Of course, we had a house full as it was. But all that music, I have decided to give that music to somebody if somebody is interested, you know, a collector that would be interested in that sort of music.
What if the boys were thinking about joining the Army, were there girls in high school who left to get married? Was that common?
One or two. Mm-hmm. Not so common as it would be today. Mm-hmm. Just one or two. I do remember that. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
And a lot of the soldiers that were in this, the soldiers that came to Waco were the 32nd Division, and they were Wisconsin and Michigan soldiers. And when they came back from the Army, they came back to Waco and married Waco girls. In fact, I think two of them married before the men went overseas and went north. And but otherwise, a lot of them, and I there's still some men here in Waco who were in that division. Mm-hmm. And they had football games. 32nd Division was Michigan and Wisconsin. They'd have Wisconsin would play Michigan, and Michigan would play Wisconsin. And they had it was kind of a small football field out behind the Cotton Palace. And they would go out there and play. Well, the merchants were sponsoring this and would sell tickets to it, and it benefited the soldiers, did something for the soldiers out there. Well, my dad had the business downtown, and they would come and give him complimentary tickets. Well, we didn't go. The girls of us didn't go, but the little boys in the family, my brother and some of his cousins, two cousins, and there was more than enough tickets for them. So they'd go down on Clay Street and stand on the corner, and they'd see soldiers walking up. They'd hand them the tickets. They wanted to be sure those tickets went into the hands of soldiers. The little kids were crazy about the soldiers, especially the little boys. But those football, I think they played a Baylor group even once out there, and a high school group, you know, just move. And on Armistice Day, I've already said something about Armistice Day, but they had a big parade, and the soldiers marched from 19th Street, if you know where that is, all the way down to Cotton Palace Park. And they had a parade with the soldiers in the parade, and you could hear those boots on that. It was something. And they had some of the artillery, you know, they've horses and different things that they put in the parade. And they had that big parade on Armistice Night, and then everybody went out to the Cotton Palace, and that place was full of Waco. I don't think anybody was at home there. And they had a big celebration. They had fireworks. They had a sing song. They had everything out there. That was November the 11th, Armistice Day. Oh, I told you about the French class that was put into high school one year, in the last year of high school, and that was because they discontinued the German class. They substituted French. Well, everybody thought the thing to do was to take French because of the war, you know. That was one of the influences of the war. It made French so popular, you just had to have a course in French. And my dad thought French was the grandest place in the world. I even made a scrapbook of all the materials that came out in the Literary Digest. You know, we had a book called the Literary Digest before the Reader's Digest. And I have a scrapbook of French clippings, pictures of the war. And I have a scrapbook of the Italians with the Mussolini during the war. That old Literary Digest was a good magazine. And but the styles, you know, and you were asking about the styles. And then came in this the flapper age, you know, right after the war. And a lot of that came from France. Mm-hmm. A lot of the haircuts, mm-hmm. were styles of the short haircuts. Because they said that, in fact, you'd be surprised, there were no haircuts cut short in high school that I remember, unless somebody had curly hair. Mm-hmm. They were either braided or let the hair in big braids. I wore my hair in braids across my head. Mm-hmm. I had long hair way down below my waist. But then when the war was over, people began to do things differently. That war really had a lot of influence.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about World War I there and Waco, as we've talked about some already, do you recall anything about the sale of Liberty Bonds?
There were big programs. In fact, they would come and get high school students to go and perform with groups that would go out and try to sell, and people would give programs. They'd get maybe some actor or somebody that would come and give a kind of a little show, and then try to sell Liberty Bonds. And they would have parades, you know, to start it off, and then they'd go somewhere with a program. Mm-hmm. My grandfather bought a lot of Liberty Bonds, and I remember before he died, there were some Liberty Bonds that had to be taken care of. Mm-hmm. But those were, and they would have, all every week there was somebody selling Liberty Bonds. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing. Mm-hmm. And that was to help the war. And they had posters, you know, with the Statue of Liberty and Uncle Sam all over town, mm-hmm. holding Liberty Bonds. It was just well advertised.
Anything else about World War I or downtown Waco? Thanks.
Well, I remember once, you know, we had a camp, MacArthur, and also we had a training school for airplanes here. I remember once that it was very unusual for us to see a plane go up, you know, one of those old-fashioned planes.
I'm glad you got
that. It was during the Cotton Palace one time. They thought they pulled a funny stunt. They thought it was funny. They had a dummy dressed like a soldier, and they let him out of the plane, and everybody was just out screaming and yelling because they thought a soldier had fallen out of the plane. And it turned out to be one of their entertainment stunts that they let this soldier fall. Mm-hmm. But we didn't hear too much about the planes in those days, but it was mostly Camp MacArthur. And Camp MacArthur was so full of people. It was a huge thing. the land that was sold out there, farmers just went to town selling their land out there. But the main thing I remember, the many parades that they put on, and of course, as I said, during the flu epidemic, it was pretty bad out there. That they had so many soldiers out there one year that they had to set up pup tents. And some of the soldiers had to live in tents. And we had this big snow, and there was a picture came out in the paper of the soldiers in the snow. And it got so bad that some of the Waco people began to take some of the soldiers into their homes and try to find places for them to get out of that bad weather, because they had sent, in addition to the 32nd Division, they'd sent soldiers from other places, had come to Waco, and they didn't have space for them. Now, the Cotton Palace, after the Egyptian, I think it was the Egyptian that I've always thought was the most beautiful of all the courts. Shortly after that, we had the Camp MacArthur came to Waco, and the atmosphere changed for the Queen's Ball. I remember the first Queen's Ball we had after the Cotton Palace, after the war started, was just completely military. A general named Hahn, H-A-U-N, they always thought about, he must be German. He got this German in our midst. But anyway, he was the commanding brigadier general there out at the camp. And he not only led the parade, which was entirely military, they had a lot of the soldiers marching in the parade and some of the equipment that they used in the war and everything. And he led the parade, and then that night led the grand ball at the Cotton Palace. Of course, he was escorting the Egyptian lady. But she was very regal. Helen Williams was her name, and she looked like the Goddess of Liberty, you know, that she had that stance. And she made a good showing. And then a lot of the escorts for the other girls were military also. In addition to during this week before the Queen's Ball, of course, the Queen's Ball had a special day in the week. It was always about a Friday. And then they had the soldiers out on the field. We had a little football, what they called a football field. It was very simple. One side was for the people who bought season tickets. The other side was for the college groups. And Baylor had the bleacher side. Very weak bleachers. I remember how those bleachers used to sway all the time when they'd get up and yell, and it used to worry me. But they would have sham battles. You see, we had Michigan and Wisconsin, and they'd put on sham battles out there. And you could hear that for blocks. We couldn't, if it came home, you know, and they had them at night, we didn't go, maybe the one night we didn't go. You could hear them from our house, and it was, you could hear the bullets. You know, of course, they were false bullets. But it was a real battle that they put on, and that was one of the big drawing cards during that time, because everybody was war-minded. And, of course, that was the field where Baylor played football, and that's where we won our 24 championship. So it was a famous spot.